This is an ABC podcast.
Live across Victoria.
On the ABC Listen app.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
The conversations that are important to you. In your town, your suburb.
This is The Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt.
Well, rock and roll was the medicine that Melbourne needed this week. It has pumped us up. It's brought out our devil horns, our black t-shirts, our bagpipes, and our deep love of turning it up loud. Whether it be Metallica, Oasis, AC/DC, 370 plus bagpipers, or maybe it's Amel and the Snippers with a free gig at Federation Square tonight, we are all things rock and roll. And something else that I've loved this week is the number of parents that I've spoken with who have taken their really young kids to AC/DC because they've wanted them to experience just the love of rock and roll. I've spoken with dads taking their daughters, mums taking their sons, and old mates reconnecting.
I've seen them a few times and that's the best they've sounded. Picked up an old mate of mine from the Castlemaine Railway Station. We drove down and the Castlemaine, the Bendigo train was full of AC/DC fans going down at 2 o'clock, and also brought my two young sons with me, 11 and 8. Day off school, rock and roll day today. We slept in a motel and we slept in and we just had breakfast. I said, this is what rock and roll is, boys.
This is what rock and roll is, boys. I don't know whether sleeping in a motel and having breakfast in bed is rock and roll. Maybe sleeping in a gutter, waking up under a bridge. Maybe sitting down having a sausage roll is a little more rock and roll, but we certainly love it. So if you've been to one of those gigs tonight, what did you do? What did you enjoy? But also, where did your love of rock and roll come from? Was it because your mum or your dad took you to a gig? Did you bust out their record collection? Maybe it was a sibling or a boyfriend or a girlfriend. Who and where and how did you start your love of rock and roll?
Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Where did your love of rock and roll start? Was it someone? Was it a place? Was there a moment? Was there a particular record? 1-300-222-774. Ryan Egan from Double J. Rock and roll, like seriously, this week in Melbourne, we have never needed rock and roll more. It has been so great.
Oh, it's been brilliant,
hasn't it?
And Oz Music Month as well. So celebrating Australian rock and roll with one of the biggest rock and roll bands on the planet, like ever, for the last 50 years, having AC/DC in Melbourne. What a buzz. What an incredible atmosphere. One gig down, their first gig in a few months as well, and, you know, shaking the foundations of the city.
Like quite literally.
Literally, like cataclysmic sounds. I think everyone's really buzzing.
The other thing that I've loved is not only parents taking young kids, and I'm talking really young, six-year-olds. You know, I've got a colleague here who saw someone in front of them who had a six-year-old with them. We just heard from a dad who took their young sons. I heard from another parent who took their 11-year-old. It was his birthday. There's always that one moment or that one person who introduces you to rock and roll if you love it. Do you have a particular, like, can you pinpoint the moment you heard rock and roll and something shifted?
I think it was my dad and Beatles records, which are still pretty rock and roll, you know, remember? But for me, the AC/DCs and Black Sabbaths and the Angels and that Australian pub rock and roll was probably my cousin Biff.
Is that really his name?
Yeah, well, that's his nickname. He's Anthony. Shout out to Anthony. He lives in Tamworth. And we used to visit him in Queensland and he had all those records. I mean, on cassette, of course.
Of course.
But he had a double cassette deck so I could tape them and
What a skill. The fact that skill doesn't exist anymore.
No, kids don't understand, do they?
The pressure, like if you just held it down and flipped up your finger at the right time.
Totally. And you'd run out of a side. Yeah. Maybe like halfway through a song. Only 45 minutes.
Pencil in, roll it back. Yep. What a skill that was. Hey, let's have a chat to Bob, who's in Eltham. When did your love of rock and roll start, Bob?
Well, way back. I went to, this would be in the early 50s, there was a a film, and I can't remember the name. Glenn Ford was in it. He was a school teacher in a detention, juvenile detention thing, and the theme song for the film was Rock Around the Clock with Bill Haley. And people were getting up in the theatre and dancing.
How good.
Which was not heard of in those days at all.
And is that where it all started for you, Bob?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was off. And funnily enough, not funny, but my father said, oh, that's race music. And I said, what are you talking about? And he said he was in the RAAF during the war in the islands and came across the Yanks. And when the Yanks heard something like that, they called it race music, which, of course, is the blues, which is what sort of rock and roll is based on.
Did you go and see AC/DC, Bob?
No, I'm too old for that.
They're never too old, Bob. Look at the actual band members themselves. This Led Zeppelin, absolutely. Deep Purple was mine. Smoke on the Water. Robert's in Melton. G'day, Robert.
Hello, how are you going there this morning?
Yeah, good, man. You sound like you're in a good mood.
I am always in a good mood. When to hear someone talking about rock and roll makes me feel even better. My love of rock and roll started with my first record. Was a mono version of the Beatles' Revolver in 1966 for Christmas. And that the light switch came on then, and to quote Joan Jett, I just love rock and roll, and I'm still buying records and I'm still buying CDs, and I listen to it on a great hi-fi. Rock and roll's the greatest thing that God ever invented. It's fantastic.
It gives you an energy. Do you listen to it even when you're cooking? When do you listen to it, Robert? Anytime, anywhere, anyhow?
Any time of the day. And I have decent stereo, so I can listen while I'm cooking, and it inspires you to cook better. You know, listen to Janis Joplin or AC/DC or, you know, the Sex Pistols or even Courtney Love. You know, there's so much great rock and roll around. Amel and the Sniffers.
Yes, well, so, Amel and the Sniffers. You'll be able to head to Federation Square tonight. So Ryan Egan, Double J is presenting. So Amel and the Sniffers have got a free... We haven't had enough rock and roll in Melbourne, right? And it's continuing at the moment. Amel and the Sniffers are playing a free gig at Federation Square tonight. It's being presented by Double J. I have a vibe, my friend, that it's going to be big.
Oh, yeah. I'm slightly frightened.
I am slightly frightened too.
Did you see how many people were out for the bagpipes the other day? I mean, that was
thousands.
Almost like 8,000, 10,000 people. When the Federation Square gets really full, it is really exciting, though. It's electrifying down there. And they've had some really great free gigs recently, particularly Australian bands filling the square. So Amel and the Sniffers tonight, kicking off at 7:30 with a local punk band called Public Figures, a duo. Their names are Gigi and Evie, inspired by Amel and the Sniffers as well. So they'll have a great time on
stage.
What
a great storyline, right? Because Amel and the Sniffers, inspired by AC/DC, and then you've got another young, like that generational, and that's what I've seen with AC/DC in particular, even Metallica to a certain degree, but just that generational passing down of music.
Well, there's a great video on the Amel and the Sniffers Instagram page where you can see their reaction to watching AC/DC the other night when they got to support them and then got to watch the band themselves, and they, you know, changed up some of their tour to be able to support the band too. So when you've got a band that you really feel deeply about, who've inspired you, who've given you a love for rock and roll, you'd do anything for them, wouldn't you?
Absolutely.
And, you know, I think there's going to be some young kids at Fed Square tonight who might see Amel and the Sniffers for the first time and be inspired as well.
The thing that I've been enjoying hearing all of the stories and witnessing is going to a huge gig. And I mean, this sort of thing happened at Taylor Swift, which you expected, but with something like AC/DC, there might have been a stereotype of the type of person that went or the sort of behaviour that would happen. But it felt like the energy, the love, the spirit was sort of the same. People looking out for each other, all different ages, that there was... I don't know, just kindness isn't the right word, but there's a bit of love in the audience and everyone is there for the same reason.
I think so. I went to Metallica the other night. That was really big at Marvel Stadium. And, you know, there's perhaps a perception that heavy metal fans are a particular type of person. They might be aggressive. But we, you know, from my experience, it's the exact opposite, actually.
Yeah.
It's people who are quite sensitive. They're very respectful of each other's spaces, but they're there to have a good time. They're there to let out something inside them that perhaps they don't get a chance to let out at other times as well. They can throw their horns in. in the air. They can scream and yell.
Did everyone still have long hair? Or is that like the long hair was just a thing of the past?
Long hair at the back and a bit of short, you know, a bit short on the top nowadays.
Party out the back, business up the front.
Exactly, exactly. But it was a wide range of ages as well. And again, if you've been introduced to a band in your teenage years who you've never had a chance to see live, now you're an adult, you've got a bit older, and they're back and touring again. The Oasis tour was a good example. Yeah. This is your first chance to see someone. Imagine if Led Zeppelin came out. Now, imagine if the Beatles were playing this week at the MCG. It'd be phenomenal. People would be seeing them for the first time, having heard them for their whole lives.
Damien's in Moorabbin. Hi, Damien.
Yeah, g'day, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, so I was fortunate enough to grow up in a large family. I was the youngest of eight boys, and I learnt a lot about music from my older brothers, and it was just magnificent. Like rock and roll, you got Bowie, you got all. I had everything. I experienced everything, and I love all music.
And what would you listen to it when your brothers would introduce you to it? Was it cassette, vinyl?
Yeah, exactly what you said before. The little flip top, open one, and have to rewind it. Actually, I had one. It was AC/DC Back in Black, and I broke it because I couldn't rewind it all the time.
There's been a real energy in Melbourne this week, and maybe for the last couple of weeks, but this week in particular has been cranked up to 11, Damien. Have you felt it too?
Oh, absolutely, 100%. I like I'm in construction, and it's just been rocking on site. It's just been going crazy. It's awesome.
Oh, good on you, man. Thank you. This, my late dad, born 95 years ago, took the tween age brothers and their two friends to the Kiss concert at Waverley Park. He said it was the show of a lifetime. And 30 years ago, I answered a singer wanted ad in Duke magazine, Rest in Peace magazine. I'm now married to the guitarist.
Oh, brilliant.
We're still rock and roll, and we're taking the kids to see AC/DC. But lots of people talking about just when and how they were introduced to rock and roll. Jenny's called through. Oh, that was you, Jenny. G'day.
Yes, that's me. Hello.
I love that story.
It's a good one, isn't it? It's a good origin story.
So you answered an ad. So I love the idea too. You know, what was it? Guitarist or singer wanted?
Yes, that's right, singer wanted,
yep.
And it was for a hard rock band. I eventually got the gig and then, yes, ended up marrying the guitarist. We've got a couple of kids and one of them is an amazing budding guitarist who we're taking to see AC/DC on Sunday night.
And do you guys, like, have a bit of a family band situation going on now?
It's on the cards. It's on the cards. Yeah. We do have we're called Riff Raiders. We're another Melbourne rock band that plays all the dirty dive bars.
And how amazing. Long did you guys gig together?
Oh, gosh, we're aging ourselves. We've been gigging together ever since, really. So Riff Raiders have done over 100 shows here in Melbourne and around Australia. It's just something that we love to do together.
Oh, good on you, Jenny. Enjoy AC/DC. Ryan Egan is with you from Double J. So this text, and I agree with this, it's from Reg, and it says, hey, Rish, sorry to poo on your party, but not everyone can afford the money to go and see all of these concerts. However, you know, back in our day, we would buy the records and the CDs growing up, listening to this, that groundswell of the music, but I don't have the cash to go to this. But this is part of it. I actually agree that very few people can go and hand over the money. But what I've noticed is people ringing in and talking about busting out the records again and listening, or, you know, there's the free gigs tonight. So it's more about the energy and the feeling that's been generated in the city, even if you're not going to the gig.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it is expensive. And, you know, if your favourite band comes, maybe you can save up and spend money on that. But if you can't, there's also other shows in Melbourne. We're lucky to live in a city that has live music 24 hours a day, almost seven days a week, and small venues and bands like Riff Raiders and other bands who are playing tonight somewhere in Melbourne perhaps are a little bit cheaper. So there may be also your favourite band out there right now that you've never discovered. I think if you can be electrified and excited about rock and roll again through what's happening this week or this month, and thinking about Oz Music Month as well, maybe it is an opportunity to, you know, pick up a gig guide, you know, and try to find something near you that you might like to go and see. Even if it's not rock and roll, if that's not your cup of tea, perhaps it's folk music. You know, a lot of old rockers get a little older and start to lean into other types of music and genres. And, you know, I mean, live music really is just one of the most incredible things things you can experience no matter where it is.
What are we going to do when it all dies down? Like, it's going to, you know, when the party ends and you're like, oh, now we just have to clean up. What are we going to do? Or do you think the energy will keep going?
Look, I think, you know, hopefully it keeps going. And again, hopefully people can be reminded when they see a band like AC/DC and feel that energy from an Australian rock band, that there is, again, as I said, this underlying body of musicians and sounds and ideas that you can get in touch with. And, yeah, you know, get out there and see some other Australian music as well.
So Amel and the Sniffers tonight, presented by Double J,
yes,
live at Federation Square. We are predicting thousands of people. What time should people get down there?
I'd get there early.
Like now.
Yes. Well, it all kicks off around 7:30. And if you can't get in through the front of Federation Square outside Flinders Street, maybe go around the back behind Acme and up through that back way as well. And Amel and Sniffers should be on stage around about 8:30. It's a free gig. It's all ages. Look after each other. Look after kids if you see them there.
Yeah.
But have fun and, get excited.
Great. What a great get. Well done. Ryan, enjoy. So when are you heading to Akadaka Sunday?
I'm going to go down in time to see Amel and the Sniffers and the Casanovas, who are one of the other supports on Sunday night. I'm looking forward to the show. I'm hoping that it's not going to be too wet.
Are you going to take earphones, like earbuds, now that we're old?
I have to take earplugs. Yeah. You know, and I sit at the couch at night and it's just like, so I definitely bring the earplugs.
There is a certain age demographic where all of us just have tinnitus. Absolutely.
Yeah. I didn't do a very good job in my teens, I don't think.
Have a great weekend. Thank you.
Thanks,
Ryan Egan from Double J's, who said they are presenting Amel and the Sniffers, who are a free gig live down at Federation Square tonight. Still coming up in around 15 minutes time, Jacinta Parsons, as always, will be joining me as she does every Friday. And today we're going to be looking at the death of the rom-com. So Reese Witherspoon has come out and said, now that we don't watch or make rom-coms anymore, the next generation don't know how to ask someone out, don't know how to deal with rejection, don't know how to flirt. So were the rom-coms educational? We thought they were cringy, but were they actually helpful? So that's coming up a little later as well.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
So if you heard the term intimacy coordinator, well, you might have heard it because it's been in the headlines a little bit lately. If you're scrolling through Instagram, you may have seen mega movie star Jennifer Lawrence talking about the idea of declining an intimacy coordinator. Now, this is while she's working on her current huge film, Die My Love, with James Patterson. So she said, no, I don't think I need one.
We did not have one, or maybe we did, but we didn't really. I felt really safe. He's like not pervy.
Yeah.
And very in love with Suki.
Yeah.
And so we mostly were talking about our kids and our relationships. So there wasn't any weird, does he think I like him?
Right. Yeah.
So that's Jennifer Lawrence talking about the idea that she said no to an intimacy coordinator on the set of Die My Love. So what does an intimacy coordinator do? And this is a term that we're hearing more and more often. Well, Lisa Petty is an intimacy director and coordinator, currently working on the musical Hair, which is performing in Melbourne as we speak. Lisa, a warm welcome to the Conversation Hour.
Hi,
Rochelle. The term intimacy coordinator, we're hearing it more and more now. But what do you do? What is the role of an intimacy coordinator?
Well, it's a person that choreographs movement, choreographs the intimacy scenes, and supports, advocates for the cast and crew. So what we do is we read the scripts, and then we identify any moments that require hyperexposure, which is nudity, or any sexually intimate scenes, and then we called the director, see what exactly are you, what are you trying to achieve in this particular moment? Not so much just the scene, but each particular moment, because a lot of language is communicated through movement. The unspoken word is communicated through movement, and we move through the world physically. And through our physicality, we carry our lives and we carry our relationship to the world. We carry our relationship to space and to different individuals. So what we do with the directors. We identify the intention of each moment, and then we speak to the actors and identify if they've got any boundaries around their bodies that they do not feel comfortable exposing or interacting with, or somebody interacting with them. And then we help fulfill that intention of the director within the boundaries of the actors. So
what they feel comfortable with.
Yeah. So when the actors walk into a scene and that they or into a set, and most specifically they know what is going to happen or what is available, and we start to choreograph and collaborate. Collaboration is key, both with the actors and with the director.
Is it a relatively new role? I could imagine a few decades ago, in particular for women, and we've seen this with the Me Too movement, where, and it would also depend on your level of fame and control that you have, whether it be on a film or television or on stage. But actors having some control and some ownership over their body and over the role, is it a relatively new concept?
It's really been building momentum over that since the Me Too movement. Yeah. Originally, though, it did start in the 90s, and then it developed more in the early 2000s, and then really gained momentum after Me Too. So definitely it enables the actors to have ownership and to feel that they are profoundly secure in the scene, and therefore they can create their most creative work.
I want to play a little bit. This is Florence Pugh speaking about having an intimacy coordinator or an intimacy director.
My view is changing about it as well, because I'm now having fantastic experiences with intimacy coordinators. However, that being said, I've also had like a example where someone just made it so weird and so awkward and really wasn't helpful and kind of was just like wanting to be a part of the set in a way that wasn't helpful. And I think it's like, it's a job that's still figuring itself out, and what's allowed on camera, what's not allowed on camera, all of that is also arranged with your lawyer, because that has to be put into the contract.
Really?
Yeah. So your lawyer will basically be going through and making sure that a nudity rider, what you are allowing and what you're not allowing.
So that's Florence Pugh talking about working with an intimacy director. Lisa Petty is with you, who is one, currently working on the stage musical Hair at the moment. Because it is a relatively new role, I guess you guys are still working out what your job is and how to best enact your skills and your direction, and not take away from the actor, not take away from the story itself, especially something like Hair, right, which is sort of based on nudity.
Well, there is that one nude scene, but it's sort of important to be aware of Hair. There's no contact. It's simply people standing naked and showing the beauty of the body at that particular. No, it's very much a political statement within Hair. I think it is evolving. What Frances Pugh, I think, is referring to is when there is no collaboration with the actors, or that she doesn't feel empowered within that moment and have the support of the IC, the intimacy coordinator. So I think the key to it, the key to the work, is collaboration, listening to the actor, listening to the director, where they're absolutely to fulfil the intention of the director, and there can't be any confusion about that. You can't go in with your own idea of what this scene should be about. It's the director's scene. And then the actor, of course, has deep, deep knowledge of their character and their interpretation of the character. It's super important to respect that. And so that within that, then you've got a container, you sort of say, okay, that this is what's available to you, and then support the actors in how they communicate that particular intention.
Just finally, Lisa, is it also used, or is there potential to use something like an intimacy coordinator in scenes that are really confrontational, that are scenes that involve violence?
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. So it's not really relevant only to sexual scenes.
Yeah.
Not at all. It's I'm working on a film at the moment that where there are really quite aggressive scenes. There can be other other scenes which are familial, so how a parent relates physically to their child. How
I remember Nicole Kidman talking about that. I can't remember the movie, and there's a little boy in a bath, and I think she must have had to have yelled at him and screamed at him, and the work that went in behind the scenes with him. Mm-hmm. And I remember at the time thinking, oh, yeah, of course. You couldn't just go in and say, okay, action. Now I can start verbally abusing this young child. That needs months of work and preparation.
And even if it's as simple as how you're going to take the child's hand, how you're going to put your arm around, all of that needs a lot of work beforehand so that you have the child and the adult completely comfortable with that, and you've started developing a relationship. It can be also when somebody has a medical condition, where the character has a medical condition, how do they relate physically in an intimate scene or any kind. And when I say intimate, I feel that as soon as we have touch, as soon as we're within somebody else's intimate space, a personal space, that's an intimate scene, because that use of space really communicates an enormous amount to the audience.
I think it's an evolving world, and it's such an important role. And now that we have it, it's weird to think that they never existed. Lisa, thank you for your insights. And Chookers for Hair, the musical moment. Thanks for your time. Lisa Petty, who's an intimacy director currently working on the stage musical Hair. Coming up in just a moment, Jacinta Parsons will be joining me as always. Today we're looking at the idea of rom-coms. We don't really make them like we used to. We used to laugh at them. We used to call them a bit cringy. But did they teach us stuff that now they wouldn't have that vehicle? Did the rom-coms actually provide us something that we didn't even realise?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Just a minute, Jacinta Parsons will be joining me where we look at rom-coms. We don't really make them anymore. They used to be like the big blockbusters, now the big actors, they don't do them. Does it matter? Did we actually learn something, though, from rom-coms? Reese Witherspoon has come out and said that now that we're not making rom-coms, the next generation aren't learning how to flirt, they're not learning how to deal with rejection, they're not learning how to ask someone out. What do you think? 1-300-222-774. We've also been talking about the fact that Melbourne has got its rock and roll on this week. So who has introduced you to rock and roll? Where did that love come from? Jeff's in Bendigo. G'day, Jeff.
Oh, hello, Rochelle. How are you?
Who got you into rock and roll?
Oh, I have to go back probably the Stones and the Beatles and the Who and Them, which was the band that what's his name played in.
and did you go and see AC/DC, Jeff?
No, I didn't, because I didn't even realise they were playing. Unfortunately, but last Saturday night I went and saw HSCC.
Yeah.
The Hindley Street Country Club, which is a cover band out of Adelaide. I went to the Palais to see them. They're fantastic, absolutely fantastic. They're regarded as the world's best cover band, and they've had over 5 billion, that's billion, hits on things like YouTube and all social media, and they do some fantastic stuff like Paul Simon, Bee Gees, Carly Simon, Billy Joel, and a whole lot of others.
See, sometimes a good cover band is, you know, it really hits the spot as well. Let's have a chat to John, who's also in Bendigo. Bendigo Massive happening today. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you going?
Good. Where did your love of rock and roll come from?
Oh, probably I'll say glam rock without identifying who, but we did see Akadaka in Bendigo in 75 before they released any music commercially.
Is this the really small gig where there's only about 50 people?
No, yeah, I heard that yesterday. There's more than 50. There's probably 300 in the in the park in Bendigo. But that's not what I rang for. I was going to pick you up on. You said, what are we going to do when the gigs stop and the music stops? Well, you got to channel Status Quo. They address that with their song "The Party Ain't Over Yet." It's a great, It's a great tune, and it's still not over for them. They're still going, even though Rick passed away. His son's joined the band, and they're still gigging everywhere.
You just got to find the gigs. That's it. Rock and roll never stops. You've just got to find it. Good on you, John. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. 25 minutes away from midday. You're on The Conversation Hour. My name's Rochelle Hunt. And because it is 25 minutes away from midday on a Friday, it is time for me to look into the eyeballs, the maniac that sits in front of me, Miss Jacinta Parsons. I feel like I haven't seen you in ages.
Oh, I don't think we have. What happened? There was a week when I was away.
You were away.
You went
and
had some funny business. No, you were away twice.
I might
and then if you do it again, it'll be three times a lady.
Speaking of ladies. So, the lady that is Reese. So, if you just joined us.
Didn't you have something else you wanted to talk to me about?
Oh, maybe. I don't know. We'll see how we go.
Okay, I love it.
If you're just joining us, and this is the first time you've heard this segment, every Friday, Jacinta and I talk about something that people are talking about on the internet. Generally, Instagram. That's where I get my news and information
from. It sounds like it's 1985 and it's just arrived in our world. We're going to go to the internet. I know. Are you on TikTok?
No.
Are you on Instagram?
Yeah.
I'm not your friend.
Why?
Are you my friend?
As in, like,
I am your friend in real life.
I don't know.
Virtual friends are also important.
So Reese Witherspoon has come out on a podcast and it's sort of gone viral, and she said that the death of the rom-com means that the next generation coming through, they're not learning how to date, how to flirt, how to deal with rejection. So this is a little bit of what's been doing the rounds with Reese Witherspoon.
The past 10 years, even I would even say the past 15 years, this decline in like the making of rom-coms or like legitimate big movie stars being in rom-coms. I think it's not just rom-com movies, but I also think the rom-com television show, the television show that you watched when you were 11, 12, and 13 that made you practice, like imagine and visualize dating skills. I like that girl. I'm going to ask her out. Oh, what if she says no? Okay, well, my favorite character on the television show did that. Everybody hates Chris. And Chris asked out the hot girl and she said no, but the other girl, she really likes him and he can't tell. Social media started and then we stopped. We started kind of going, rom-coms are cringy, but it was actually where we learned social dynamics.
Was that because it's punching up, not punching down, if we make fun of the way she said, what was that word?
I flooded this around the office.
Yours.
And younger women said, rom-coms messed up my relationships.
Fantastic.
However, I heard it and went, yes, Reese Witherspoon is onto something, because I'm watching my daughter watch this kind of romancy type television series at the moment, and she's saying things to me like, Mom, I can't believe he's asking Cleo out. He's only asking Cleo out because she's good looking and doesn't know that blah blah actually likes her, and she's learning all of this stuff. So I'm a little bit team Reese Witherspoon.
I'm going to go on the opposing team. Who do I belong with in this team? Look, I get it, but I think if you know, everyone said, look, we grew up like that. We are messed up people. Do you understand me right now? We are not the cohort of humans that can say, check out our relationships.
Did you actually watch rom-coms? So I'm picking you're not a rom-commer.
Look, I have a chakra open for them because I love the nostalgia of it. I love the way it can make you feel in that hopeful romance. There's something beautiful about that feeling.
What ones did you watch?
Throw some at me. Princess Bride, is that a rom-com?
No.
Okay.
No, Notting Hill?
I watched that recently. That is one of the most shockingly terrible films ever.
I'm just a girl standing in front of a boy asking her to love him.
Look at me. I watched Heathers last night. That's not a rom-com, is it?
No.
Because that was shocking in relationship.
Does it not hold up, Heathers?
It holds up as a piece of cinema like you would not believe.
What about Women Against Women? Does it hold up there?
No.
Bad.
No, all of those 80s philosophies of how we dealt with each other in this dog-eat-dog power world is quite shocking.
Sleepless in Seattle. Harry Met Sally.
Okay. Now you're on something.
All right.
Yes, that was really...
Pretty Woman.
Well, please. What I think we need to wonder about is whether rom-coms are inherently about setting up this idea that it could be you two. You two could be loved forever because you're the one that's not the prettiest, but you're really smart. You're doing great things in the world. The amazing guy hasn't noticed you yet. You'll fall over because you're also clumsy and he'll pick you up one day and you'll, you know, be friends in some way. There's so many tropes inside this.
But is that... But you know that it's not real.
But don't you think we grew up with these ideas of romance and love that absolutely ruined our sense of what real relationships are like? Is that true?
1-300-222-774. Depending on what team you're on, Team JP or Team Reese Witherspoon, you can text 0437-774-774. This, I learnt my rom-com romance skills from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah. It's romance skills.
Well, it's the skills to ask someone out, the skills to deal with rejection. I once did this segment on the radio and it kind of was quite embarrassing. It was like this, it all came crashing back on me. I'm like, this is going to be really funny. I'm going to get in a psychologist and we're going to talk about your secret shame films and what your secret shame films
That's a
say
great idea, Rochelle.
About you. Yeah, until I gave out my secret shame films.
Which was?
And I had a couch session live on the radio.
What were they?
Well, I said I liked Made in Manhattan.
Is it Jennifer Lopez?
Yeah.
I know, I'm the sucker for it.
So Made in Manhattan and Pretty Woman.
Yeah, I don't know
about
that.
And do you know what she said to me?
What?
Live on the wireless? You have rescue issues. Films are about women being rescued.
But, there's so many of those films about being rescued. So the idea, you know, that we keep pumping out of rom-coms is lots of that stuff is becoming quite unfashioned.
Well, no one's making them anymore.
But some of the tenets of it. If we could make a rom-com that kind of suited... You know, new ideas of thinking.
Oh, you can't have a politically correct rom-com.
Oh, my goodness.
How boring.
Where are we? On 3AW, Rochelle Hunt? Do I lose the station now? No. Yes, you can. Not politically correct. Progressive.
Bridget Jones's Diary.
Yeah. Horrific in terms of...
These like, are like the most successful
films. How much do you hate Hugh Grant in that? Like, and also the poofy one, that Colin at the end. I don't... Like, dudes, the thing that I just want to say... Mm. What was I saying?
I don't know. We were yelling about...
You said
politically correct.
You know, you've just become one of those reductionists by just saying it's politically correct. It's not politically correct. It is just politically progressive.
Yeah, but that's... That's not Hollywood. Mama, we're watching trash. But the whole thing is, did we learn something from the trash? All right, this is Esther Perel. Now, you think she's sensible and you really like her.
I don't like her.
Don't you?
Well, see what she says.
All right, here's what she had to say.
The decline of the rom-com is leaving us impoverished in terms of understanding the plots of dating, of desire, of flirting, that without those stories to inform us, to allow us to activate our own imagination, we are left without the skills that we learn in watching those movies. Where does the young teenager today go to learn about dating, about initiating, about flirting, about falling in love, about sex? These used to be prime hubs for sex and relationship education. And we are inundated with lots of material that is turning us on. But that is not the same as material that activates our imagination, that ignites our own imaginative resources.
That's Esther Perel, who was reacting to Reese Witherspoon, who has gone viral talking about the death of the rom-com means that we are not learning those social skills. Rochelle Hunt and Jacinta Parsons with you. Rom-coms, did you watch them? Did you learn anything from them? Or did they just give you a messed up view of your relationship? This text, JP, how many lives were ruined by Sex in the City and waiting for Mr. Right to come along?
Correct.
Yeah.
And I think that
is painful. And I do love the original Sex and the City. Can't watch the new ones because it's just too painful. But that thing of waiting. But that, is that a rom-com?
I think so. Is it? What else is it?
I don't know. I don't know if it's a rom-com.
I just wonder about, you know, these ideas that we had about what a relationship is like and what we seek to want. It does fill us with ideas that we end up trying to replicate, I think. I don't think it's as harmless as saying it's trash.
So is that why we're not making them anymore? So I'm trying to think, and Reese Witherspoon goes on to say that big stars won't make them anymore and don't make them anymore. So that says something. However, talking around the office, some of our younger colleagues are saying the rom-com has come back through books and through literature. And if I actually look at some of the books that my daughter and her cohort are getting into, it's that early teen romance. So is the rom-com alive in literature now, just not on our screens? And maybe because we just don't have the money to pay, you know, Tom Hanks. And
or maybe it's easier to pivot in literature toward a new version of what the rom-com is. Because are we saying rom-com follows the same tropes and, you know, story arcs that we've always had in rom-coms? Or is there a new way to do this?
I remember I have a secret obsession. Do you like Matthew McConaughey?
No, I don't. What's wrong with you?
What's wrong with you?
What is wrong with you?
Anyway, I love Matthew McConaughey. Have you read his autobiography?
No.
Oh, look, he's not very smart, but he's...
Okay, so me reading it won't impress me either.
No, it's interesting to... It's an interesting autobiography. Anyhow, he speaks about choosing to get out of rom-coms. He's like, that's it, I'm done. Oh. So after How to Lose a Guy, oh, yeah, you like him all of a sudden.
No, I don't
now.
Because he would just be doing it for the brand.
How do you know?
I know this man.
So he decides that's it, no more rom-coms. And he's out of the biz for years and years and years. And he almost caves and he's offered millions and millions. And he says, no. And then they come back and it's at double digits, right? And he's like, give me the script again. Maybe. But still holds his ground and says no and has never done a rom-com since, I think it was, yeah, How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. And since that has
but what's
gone,
his reason? What's his reason
because
for
that? Because he just
know.
Wanted to be taken as a serious actor.
Yes, it's nothing to do with helping society. I have no more respect
but
with him.
But rom-coms never claim to help society.
No, but they might have damaged it.
Ooh.
That's what I'm wondering. I'm wondering whether there was more damage done than good. And I think what we love about them is that nostalgia of romance and how we imagine it. But I do think that it causes a really, it's kind of almost lateral to the reality of the world in some way, don't you think?
If one was on, would you watch it?
Of course I would. I would. I mean, yeah. Probably it's where I would go if I needed to hate myself. No, it's where I would go if I just wanted to have a relaxing, but
you
I don't
get
even,
angry watching it.
Well, no, I do. I mean, watching Grease recently.
Oh, yeah, no, that's bad.
Okay, so we're talking about dated ideas, and I think that we've progressed from there. But boy, oh boy, I don't know. Have we got a good modern idea of what a rom-com is that also encounters some changing ideas of what it is to be stalked, maybe, or to be love-bombed?
What about television shows? So the other area that Reese Witherspoon talks about is television shows now don't even go into the concept of dating and of rom-coms. If you think back to teenage Jacinta Parsons, I don't know, were you following Scott and Charlene, for example?
Yes, I was.
And were you taking cues?
That wedding was beautiful.
Mm.
And they committed to each other and she was working and he supported her as a working woman. No, I see what you're saying, but I do think that what the premise here with Reese and Esther is that these are really important movies for us to learn the art of romance and of pursuit and of navigation in that world. And I just think that is a bad premise to think about where we learn how to be romantic with each other. I don't know where we learn to be romantic with each other.
Well, this is the thing, right? When Esther talks about there's a plethora of stuff to watch now to turn you on, so to speak, but are you learning about relationships? And so where do you go then? So Reese Witherspoon's point was you did love them or hate them. You learnt, oh, why is he asking out the pretty girl when it's actually the other one that really likes him or he really likes her or he's had to deal with rejection. Where are kids, as superficial as it is, where are they learning it if it's not through that stuff?
Well, and I think we can't rely on that stuff to be doing the teaching. I think it is a really important point that Esther makes around the lack of how we talk about the navigation of humans together in that joyful, sensitive moment when you are meeting each other and what that looks like and how it feels and how vulnerable we are when we do it. I agree. with that. I just think the rom-com has set us up to fail with that, because the premise is always...
There's savior.
The narrative
arc. Princess.
Yeah, and you, if someone comes and, you know, gets off the plane and runs to you, like these big shows, you know, and we're really learning that that stuff can be problematic.
So you bring Disney into this conversation and even younger kids as well. I remember when the whole world that is Frozen came about, and my daughter wasn't into it at the time, but I was speaking to my cousin whose kid was, and I was like, oh, so what's the story? Is it just another princess story? And she said, no, it's about two sisters. And so then you can have the navigating relationships, you can have the fun and the singing and the everything, but the focal relationship was siblings, not, you know, boy chasing girl, girl chasing boy. But
and there was a bit of that in there. I actually think children's films have been the most impressive in the pivot that they've made to meet their audiences where they are. Don't you reckon? Like, we've got so many more interesting protagonists than we ever used to. The tropes are deliberately thought about to kind of challenge and break that we had previously. Like the princess that's a damsel in distress just doesn't really exist anymore in these stories and films that our kids... And I'm pretty happy often to go and watch these films because I feel like, yeah, like that's really solid thinking around how we're people together.
I love some of the old storylines and relationships that people are remembering, and some of the actors who I'd totally forgotten about. Andrew McCartney, remember him? So Pretty in Pink, like Molly Ringwood.
McCarthy. Doesn't matter.
It was alongside.
We're objectifying him, so.
Robert Downey Jr., that whole world.
The Brat Pack.
That whole scene.
Era of that.
So Kate says, unfortunately, unfortunately, my relationship models were Mulder and Scully. X-Files. Okay. How do you feel about that one?
That's interesting.
Mulder,
you know,
and Scully.
It's certainly not set up as a rom-com. Like, no. You're not turning that on for that.
But I
think complex relationships are explored better in different genres. I would like to agree with that.
When was the last time you watched Friends?
Oh, dear. Not that long ago.
It's harsh, hey?
Yeah.
I loved it. And then it was on something and I was flicking around and I thought, oh, I'll watch a bit of this. And I was sort of a bit like, really? It has not aged well.
It hasn't aged well. And that's the point, I think. I think the rom-com hasn't aged well. I think romance and comedy go really well together. But I don't think we've rethought how we actually tell those stories.
So will there be the next genre of rom-com? Well, so romance, it's classic, right? You look at Mills and Boons, you look at all of the big things that sell.
We love romance. We love to fall in love.
We also love to laugh. So can we put those two things together in a light-hearted way and still have you agree with it?
I just want our genre of the rom-com to move into what you would describe as politically correct and I would describe as barely the modern age, where we are really reflecting who we are as humans on this earth, changing the roles that we've previously had, breaking some of those ideas. Like, yeah, that's powerful and interesting then about how we navigate that.
That's it for today. Thanks for listening. Take care and we'll speak to you soon.